You can't win if you don't defend. Welcome, Bird Gang. On today's show, Zach Gerstmann joins me. Part two of the Draft Primer series, defense takes center stage. Check the archives, by the way, for a discussion on the offense. And defensively, there are two position groups that have our attention, edge and cornerback. Plus, the latest mock draft tracker and Zach's story on a couple of teammates participating in the NFL USO Tour in Poland. It's Cardinals Cover 2, Episode 745, and it starts now.
Welcome to Cardinals Cover 2.
Buda Baker, what heart, what threat. This guy's unbelievable.
Cardinals Cover 2 is presented by Hyundai, proud partner of the Arizona Cardinals, and by Arizona Cardinals Podcasts. Visit azcardinals.com/podcasts.
He's at the 10, at the 5, he's in again! Some more Murray magic!
Wow!
Here's Craig Grealoux.
Lot to get into, especially with the draft. First, though, a tip of the cap to a non-Cardinals draft pick. Finished his career with the Cardinals, however, and that is Carson Palmer. It was announced on Wednesday, part of the 2024 Senior Bowl Hall of Fame, 2003 Senior Bowl alum, the former first-round draft pick, first overall, by the way, of the Cincinnati Bengals, much deserved, and I, for one, am very happy for one of my favorite Cardinals players, even though it was later in his career. Certainly did a lot of good things for this organization on and off the field.
Ring of Honor member. So when you're able to, you know, this is the part of people's careers where you get to see the fruits of your labor start coming to fruition. You want to see it on the field, obviously, and we were able to see all the accolades that Carson Palmer was able to put together. But the awards that really mean a lot to your legacy come trickling in towards the latter half. And, you know, fortunately, that's another one added to the list for Carson Palmer.
And with Carson, he had a reputation before he arrived here in Arizona. There was the divorce, if you will, with Cincinnati. Things didn't go well with the Raiders. And I'll say this, because I can only judge people how they deal with me. Carson could not have been a better person, a better pro. Starting quarterback, you know, speaks once a week. You don't really want to bother them. They've got a lot going on. Very accessible. Very friendly. I mean, everything that you had read about him or had heard about him from the past did not make its way to Arizona.
Yeah, he was the one time I had my interaction with him, and I'm totally in the same boat with you. Very gracious with his time. It was when Arizona hosted the Super Bowl 2023. I interviewed him on Media Row. And what a great guy. He was the first person I had the chance to interview out there. And, you know, being the college kid in a room full of the most esteemed journalism professionals that the industry has, to be in that room was definitely, you know, there were a little nerves there. And with Carson being the first interview, could not have handled it any better. Greatly appreciated him taking the time. It was actually the longest interview I believe I did. So he was willing to talk, and it was a lot of great stuff.
By the way, the rest of the 2024 Senior Bowl Hall of Fame: D'Amico Ryans, Eric Weddle, Roddy White, and Marty Lyons.
A lot of star-studded names there. D'Amico Ryans, too. He just continues. His post-playing career has matched up to his playing career in terms of the accolades and the notoriety that he's gotten. And he was a really good football player as well in the NFL.
And this season, I'm rooting for the Houston Texans. Could not say that a year ago.
Because now we don't have any say, or at least any desire for a higher draft pick. Number 27, I think we all thought was going to be a lot higher than that, but still appreciative of a first-round pick.
Good lead-in as we talk the drafts and we bring Zach back here on Cardinals Cover 2, presented by Hyundai, proud partner of the Arizona Cardinals. A reminder, or remember, we did the Draft Primer offense last week. This week, up on azcardinals.com, the Draft Primer focusing on the defense: cornerback, inside linebacker, edge, safety, and defensive line. That's the order of posting on the website. So here on this Wednesday, we've got cornerback, inside linebacker, and edge all available on azcardinals.com as we kind of go position by position as far as the needs and the low, medium to high where we rank these needs. So let's start with the cornerback position. And I don't think there's any debates amongst us or amongst the fan base. Maybe not even amongst the front office personnel. Cornerback, a high need despite the depth that you have already on the roster. but you can never have enough defensive backs, especially with the way the ball is being passed in the National Football League these days.
The one thing I want to caution our listeners on when reading these mock draft or these draft primers, excuse me, we got the mock draft tracker coming out later this week as well. So
we'll get to that.
A lot of draft coverage coming out of these fingers when I start typing them onto the computer. But this is not necessarily the need at number 4 or at number 27. These are the Cardinals' needs, period. And because of that, I put it as a high need. Probably one of the highest needs that this team has across all positions on both offense and defense. I'd put edge right up there as well, and we'll touch on that in a little bit. There's a tier list, basically, when you think about it with these cornerbacks. You have the Terrion Arnolds and the Quinyon Mitchells at the top of the list, and then you start going into that second tier, the Kool-Aid McKinstrys, the Ennis Rakestraws, a handful of other different players that could potentially be mocked towards the Cardinals being at 27, at 35, a little bit later on in the draft. We were able to see the type of quality of product that Nick Rallis was able to put out on the field with players that were drafted in the third round, like a Garrett Williams, a Keytrell Clark, a lot of undrafted guys like Starling Thomas. We were able to see the impact that they were able to have on the field. So it is a high need. It doesn't necessarily mean that number 27 will 100% put the house on it is going to be a cornerback. You can't do that. First of all, it's the draft season, so you never know. But there's definitely a need at cornerback.
And all you have to do is take a look at whom the Cardinals have brought in for their top 30 visits. And according to reports, 6 cornerbacks have been brought in. There's only been one other position that's had as many or more, and that would be wide receiver at 7. But 6 different cornerbacks, defensive backs, have been brought in, including Terrion Arnold, who did meet with the Cardinals. He said at the scouting combine, we got that story between him and Jonathan Gannon going a little one-on-one. And according to Gannon, he told Arizona Sports 98.7 FM that, yeah, he did jam me in that meeting room in Indianapolis. So Gannon not afraid to get his hands dirty, so to speak, when it comes to meeting these prospective Arizona Cardinals players.
He is Gannon's as hands-on as a head coach could be. And then you thought, to go off of that a little bit, how about Nick Rallis serving as a defensive end going against offensive tackles in some of these meetings? It's truly been remarkable to see how this coaching staff has embraced. It's no longer about setting the foundation. The foundation has already been laid. Now let's set our eyes as to who can help bring this foundation to new heights and bring this team to new heights. So yes, 6 cornerbacks coming in for top 30 visits, all potentially could be available. They're all potentially on Monty Austin Fort's board. These top 30 visits get a little bit more of a one-on-ones. Let's see how the player is in our building, in our where we are in control of it. It's no longer the combine where it's the gauntlet of just going from meeting room to meeting room. Here you get to see how the player reacts to walking around the halls in Tempe.
Cardinals did address cornerback in free agency with the addition of Sean Murphy Bunting. They re-signed Bobby Price, maybe more so for his special teams ability. And then you look at who's coming back. Garrett Williams played very well in his first season, albeit abbreviated. Saw some flashes out of Keytrell Clark, Starling Thomas, also Devon Wilson. But those are 4 names, Williams, Clark, Thomas, and Wilson, who are very young in this league. Maybe a veteran gets added post-draft, but as far as day 1, day 2, day 3, would not surprise if one or multiple cornerbacks are selected just to add a little bit more competition, maybe some more depth, and to keep ramping up that room.
100%. And Sean Murphy Bunting's now become that young old vet. And there was that funny exchange with the media where he was really talking about, like, hey, I'm really not that old. But him being able to come in and bestow the wisdom that he does have. He's a Super Bowl champion. Not many other people. Aaron Brewer is the only other person in this facility that could say that they were on a Super Bowl championship winning team. Sean Murphy Bunting is one of those players. So he comes into that room, a very young room, being able to help out in whatever ways that he can. And he seems like the type of player, just based off of our handful of times talking to him, he seems like the type of player that is willing to embrace that opportunity. Now, that shouldn't shy away Monty Austin Ford or anybody else from potentially drafting a cornerback just because the room is young, because talent knows no age. It's not like you get wisdom as you get older, a year older. When you are a star-studded player, regardless if you're a rookie or you're in your 18th year, going into your 18th year like Matt Prater is, you are able to truly impact the game in more ways than one.
And you'll hear this a lot once we get to training camp and even week one or final roster cuts. Doesn't matter how you got here.
You're here.
You're here, and everyone is in the same boat. You're trying to make the 53-man roster. So, yeah, maybe you were a free agent addition. Maybe you're a high draft pick. Maybe you have a little bit more of a head start as far as a longer leash. Bottom line is nothing is guaranteed for any of these spots on the roster.
And I think about the roster that the Cardinals had in 2023. Think about the impact players. They weren't even on the defensive side, especially. They weren't even on the roster in the beginning during going into training camp. I mean, you think about the cornerback room. Starling Thomas played a lot of snaps. He was brought in at the waiver cut. You think about on the offense, and let's go defensive tackle. That entire room was not around week one. You have a Roy Lopez jumping in midway through the season, right after week three, week four, and he's playing a lot of consecutive snaps. A guy like Jeff Swaim on the offensive side of the ball, they brought him in during training camp, and he made an impact and found a way to get onto the roster. So regardless of how you got here, it goes back to your point. They're here, and what are you able to do to pay the price of admission, put the team above yourself, and win the Cardinals some football games?
So cornerback, a high need. The other high need defensively is outside linebacker / edge rusher. And it's a high need from our vantage point, but I am still very curious on how this coaching staff views that position. One, it wasn't addressed. No additions in free agency outside of re-signing Jesse Luketta, but that room has remained untouched. And do they expect a year two jump from a Zaven Collins, a year two jump from B.J. Ojulari as far as Zaven, brand new position a year ago, Ojulari didn't have an offseason because coming off an injury. Do they expect improvement from those two specifically because of what they did in free agency with the defensive line? Maybe the byproduct of a stronger defensive line, maybe a better secondary. The quarterback now hangs on to the ball a little bit longer, and that allows Zaven, Ojulari, Gardeck, Cameron Thomas, whomever, to get into the backfield.
By reinforcing the defensive line, by bringing in a Justin Jones, a Bilal Nichols, re-signing LJ Collier, that gives your edge rushers, your outside linebackers, the ability to get to the quarterback because the focus isn't just no longer on the edge and not as much of a focus on the defensive line. Now that entire defensive front seven is going to be watched by offensive coordinators and by that offensive line because they know that the Cardinals have the ability to get to the quarterback now across, right on top of the nose, right by the center, and on the edge. I think back to what Rob Rodriguez told us on a Friday before one of the games, and we were talking about the development of the room, and he said how the most inexperienced player in that room was not B.J. Ojulari, despite being a rookie, but it was Zaven Collins because this is an entirely new position because of the fact that BJ played at LSU as that edge, as that outside linebacker. Zaven was that interior middle linebacker. He was able to kind of go all across the field. Now he kind of found that new home at the edge. So do you expect that second level jump? I do. Zaven Collins is the first round pick for a reason. We know the type of skill sets that he has. Now being able to really dive into the technique as opposed to just the specific movements, that really allows him to make that jump. Hopefully we'll be able to see it come to fruition.
And it's easy to judge this room based off the number of sacks. We heard Jonathan Gannon in January say, when asked about the lack of sack production, that sacks, in his mind, not a winning stat. But you have to affect the quarterback. The pressures, the hurries, the knockdowns. Are you making that quarterback uncomfortable? I don't think that happened consistently enough from this defense a year ago. So again, a high need as far as outside linebacker is concerned is at day one, day two. But if an outside linebacker is not selected or they wait until day three, it might say something to how they view the players already on the roster. Going back to our discussion, hey, we improved the defensive line. We expect those guys now on the outside to make that jump, to show some improvement, to take the skills that Zaven learned for the first time, maybe in a long time. What we were teaching BJ, the jump from college to the NFL. All right, now go do it in year two.
I would be surprised if the Cardinals did not address the position through the draft because of the plethora of talent that is available and likely will be available towards 27 or 35 or even later on in the draft with the Jonah Ellis and Austin Booker. There's a handful of different players that made their mark in college that are likely to slip a handful of different rounds just because of the bunches of positions. Like, this is the year where wide receiver in bunches is a really good spot. Offensive line in bunches is really solid. Edge, you kind of have the tiers with it a little bit, but there's still a bunch of good edge rushers potentially available. They do, and they very well could, believe that the guys in the room right now are the ones that they need to make it happen. They very well could believe that. We've seen that they've made roster moves throughout the offseason, releasing players that they probably did not think, as Jonathan Gannon says, when a player is normally released, normally what he says is it's got to benefit the team. You obviously are not going to release somebody that benefits the team. So they did not touch the room. They very well could believe that all the pieces are already there. I do think, though, personally, that a presence on the edge, and I was thinking about this, think about all the times we talked about Paris Johnson Jr. having to go against a Micah Parsons, a Nick Bosa, any of these edge rushers, a Miles Garrett who was able to go to any side of the offensive line. TJ Watt truly attack. The Cardinals have players that can do that, but it's not as much the presence as much. And I think if you bring in another highly touted college prospect, you bring him into the fold, that could potentially be that presence on the edge that offensive line have to seriously take into account.
Might that be Leatu Latu, Chop Robinson? Pause for dramatic effect Zach, Penn State Nittany Lion, and Dallas Turner. Those three I mentioned specifically because they, according to reports, were in for top 30 visits. Again, some of these visits make what you want. Is it more for later on down the road, something you didn't get to during the combine or the Senior Bowl or the Hula Bowl? Or do you really have an interest in these particular players? With the edge, it's more likely 11, 12, 13 if there's a trade down, or to your point, maybe that second first-round pick at 27.
Because of all the potential trades, players like Dallas Turner that in most years would be a top-five pick are really starting to slip down the board. It's not often that you have, or it's never, that you have one, two, three, potentially four if the Cardinals decide to make a trade or not, be quarterback. And then you have one, two, three being wide receivers, and then offensive line. It doesn't happen that often. So players like Dallas Turner, like Quinyon Mitchell, like Terrion Arnold, normally these players would be in the top 10, especially as defensive studs. Now they're starting to trickle down the boards a little bit.
All right, so high for cornerback, high for edge. The other three positions, inside linebacker, safety, defensive line. Let's go inside linebacker. The story posted on Tuesday on azcardinals.com. And this, I could see a low need, a medium need, low to medium, medium to low, because you do have Kaiser White. You re-signed Chris Barnes. You went out and got Mack Wilson in free agency. So it's not a high need specifically as far as you need a starter. You want someone that maybe special teams, at least initially, like an Owen Papo, maybe late in the draft, who can develop into one of those rotation pieces and ultimately become a starter. But based off what this team has done already, I would not put inside linebacker as a high need at this point when you talk about the draft needs ahead of cornerback or edge.
I listed it as a medium need, and I was toying between low and medium. I was kind of at that medium to low, a little bit leaning towards medium, which is ultimately the one I decided, because I was thinking about it. And when Kaiser White was injured in the game against Houston, tore his bicep, which he thought was just a cramp, which is absolutely insane. I can't even imagine that being, you know, coming through my head and be like, I got a cramp in my arm, I'll go right back out there, as the muscle is just torn completely off the bone. But that's neither here or there. When he was not on the field, that room took a hit. It was an entirely different position. How they attacked the run, there wasn't that downhill thumper on the roster that was really able to step in. Chris Barnes did a really solid job coming in, playing that green dot. Josh Woods did as well. And then you could start to see a little bit of Owen Papo. And when Kaiser spoke to the media earlier this week on Monday, he said, Owen Papo has the chance to be really good. I'm excited to see that jump from year one to year two from Owen Papo from the Auburn Tiger. In that room as a whole, though, I think that with Kaiser looking towards the future, he is a pending 2025 free agent. He's scheduled to do that. While Mack Wilson could be that downhill thumper, and he'll pair really nicely with Kaiser White, You got to have that future in mind. There's a lot of good inside linebackers. There's not that one that really stands out amongst the rest. Like Edgerrin Cooper from Texas A&M is kind of that only player, but he also could potentially be a late first round, early second round pick. There's players like Jeremiah Trotter Jr., Cedric Gray, Peyton Wilson, who Luke Kuechly gave tons of praise for. And for me, growing up, Luke Kuechly was like the middle linebacker. He was the guy. So when Luke Kuechly puts his stamp of approval on a player like Peyton Wilson, that automatically perks my ears up. Still, it's not a day one, it's not a week one need, because you have your downhill thumpers, you have your solid middle linebackers already in a Kaiser White and in a Mack Wilson.
Could just depend on how the draft board falls as well. If there's a surprise that's available when the Cardinals are picking in the second or third round, all of a sudden inside linebacker becomes that position. All right, safety. And you certainly don't expect Buda Baker or Jalen Thompson to miss any time. And those two consistently on the back end every single week, darn near every single snap. Not a lot of room when you're talking about a safety coming in to try to spell one of those guys or push them to the side. It's just not going to happen. Yet at the same time, and you brought up, what did general manager do? It's not just the now, it's future. And looking ahead, and you look ahead to contract status, Buda Baker, Jalen Thompson. Safety, again, I would put in the low to medium, maybe more so low than anything else, just because at least this season, yeah, there's no one that's going to supplant Buda Baker or Jalen Thompson. It's impossible. They know the defense. They're too good of a player that you want to be on the sideline watching and have someone else out there.
I do have it as a low need because, yes, Buda Baker is also going to be another 2025 free agent. If you look at the Cardinals free agents in 2025, it's a long list. Now, a lot of those players will be addressed, and a lot of those players are still going to be vying for that 53-man roster spot because a lot of them are futures players, players that they just signed to one-year contracts, whatever it might be. I still have it as a low need because, as you mentioned, there really isn't a player in the safety draft class right now that truly stands out. Cooper DeJean is kind of that fascinating wild card added to the mix because of his versatility, being able to play on the outside as a slot corner, as a safety. He was able to do it all at Iowa. If you're able to bring him in, you're addressing the corner position more than the safety position. And to think about it, Buda Baker, in a off year for him, still made it to the Pro Bowl. Jalen Thompson had a Pro Bowl-worthy season. 4 interceptions, 78 tackles. He also had a really solid year. This is just in year one of the Nick Rollins defensive scheme. To see how they could ultimately evolve and develop in year two, and both of them missed time as well with injuries. So that's why I have it as a low need, because you already have a lot of the pieces intact already in the room.
Yeah, when you're breaking down, okay, these are the positions we want to target and target early in the draft, safety certainly is not one of those positions. Now, it might be a position that you're looking on day 3, and we go back to that kickoff rule. What do you want? Who do you want out there? Do you want more athleticism? Do you want more of that cornerback, wide receiver, body type, athleticism that might benefit, whether that's kickoff coverage or kickoff return? And then, again, it's not a number of plays or a number of kickoffs in a game, but you're guaranteed 2. Mm-hmm. And you want to make sure you're ready. In this new rule, it might be just 1 kickoff that you can break off 40, 45 yards or a touchdown, because everything is so compact. And we heard Jonathan Gannon talk about it earlier this week when he met the media, that return man is on those other bodies real quick. And maybe it's a shifty back out there that can make 1 or 2 people miss, and all of a sudden it's a long game because there's no one playing free safety, so to speak, outside of the kicker.
Of course. And in terms of the returner, you potentially already have that in a Greg Dortch and a DJ Dallas that they brought in through a free agency. There's a lot of speed on this Cardinals roster. And now with that rule, though, speed could only mean so much when you're only a handful of yards away from the returner. Now you need the players that are going to be able to tackle, and they got to want to get physical because you are right there on it. If Jonathan Gannon could make a handful of tackles himself, and just as the coaches were walking through what it could potentially look like with this kickoff rule, You need somebody else that's also going to be able on the field on Sundays, able to come in and make a stop, because you do need that thumper that is going to be able to consistently tackle. And whether that is in that safety room or potentially on cornerback, talking about versatility, Cooper DeJean, he's like the versatility king of this draft because of all the different stuff that he did at Iowa. I'm not sure if that says more about Iowa than it does about Cooper DeJean, but maybe that's some Big Ten slander on my end. I do know, though, he was a solid returner for the Iowa Hawkeyes out there as a punt returner, kick returner. He has a lot of speed, and guys like Nate Wiggins as well from Clemson, another cornerback, a little bit leaner, not as physical, but he's able to break free, and he has the ability to also make those tackles.
By the way, every time we keep bringing up JG and this kickoff return, kickoff coverage that they repped it out on the field, I can't get that visual out of my head on the number of different coaches and maybe support staff out there going through the motions, maybe going through it full speed, and Jeff Rogers on the sideline going, hey, I need to know what this looks like. Stop messing around as far as, hey, breaking a tackle or trying to get a long return. So I'm fascinated to know what that looked like, because I can play it in my mind, and knowing how competitive a lot of those coaches are, because a lot of them are former players. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter if we need to go half speed and rep this for you, Jeff. I'm going to make sure I don't get beat by somebody and then have to hear about it later in the meeting room.
Two things come to my mind when I think about it. I think about JG clapping over somebody. I'm not sure why, but I could just see him like just talking that trash a little bit. And then I could also, obviously they weren't there, but I could picture just a player just like sitting down at the bench, watching, just like a parent watching like the kids go out to the yard and practice on like flag football or something. Can you just imagine if like Kyler Murray, James Conner, Buda Baker were just sitting on a ledge and just watching the coaches do exactly what they coach?
That's not a bad idea.
That's good content.
Once OTAs begin and you can have coaches and players on the field together actually going through things and work, maybe they do a little role reversal and put the coaches out there and the players can be on the sideline acting like those older parents and yelling at their kids.
I don't know how. I don't know who needs to approve it or what needs to happen for it to happen, but Craig Grillo, we're on to something.
That'll be fascinating. All right, let's get back to the matter at hand. Draft primer.
That defense. Wasn't the matter at hand.
It's a little bit of a
content
sidebar.
Planning.
Content, yes. Last position group on the defense, and that is defensive line. We know this was a major focal point, a high priority in free agency. Justin Jones, Bilal Nichols, Kyrus Tonga. You re-sign LJ Collier. You've got Dante Stills. You've got Roy Lopez, Phil Hoskins, Naquan Jones, Ben Stilley. You look at that. You read that. Okay, not a big need. I'm going to beg to differ. I don't know if it's a high need, certainly medium to high. Defensive line, based off what I think this coaching staff wants to do on that front seven, it wouldn't surprise me, especially late first round, day two, that there's not a young defensive lineman, i.e. defensive tackle, that can come in, maybe learn a little bit, get a handful of snaps, maybe more so, really develop into something that the Cardinals now draft, develop, and pay, as opposed to having to go out onto the market. You already have someone in-house.
Okay, so full transparency, Cover 2 listeners. I haven't written this one out yet. So, Craig Grillo, we're about to break through a draft primer right now. So we have it in the different sections. The need we'll get to at the end. Cardinal situation, the draft class, and then the conclusion. So the situation, you mentioned a handful of those different names. They've added reinforcements to the room, and there are a lot more names on that list as opposed to last year. The draft class, yes, there are a handful of players, a Byron Murphy, that really stands out as that defensive tackle, truly the Jerzon Newtons, the Johnny Newtons of the world. They're potentially there at 27, potentially there at 35, whatever it might be. Now the conclusion. Because you added those reinforcements into the room, you made it a heavy emphasis to highlight the trenches throughout this process. Now, we know that Nick Rallis loves to rotate between defensive tackles, defensive linemen, make sure that everybody stays fresh. You have Tonga, Justin Jones, Bilal Nichols, LJ Collier. Those are four right there that are going to be rotating in and out a handful of different times. Who else?
I would think this coaching staff saw enough out of Dante Stills.
Correct.
Who played a lot more than maybe everyone, including himself, expected to, and it was because he had to because of injuries. I thought Roy Lopez came in and gave them some solid work. Now, there's two more names, so that's six total.
And we're just thinking of this. I'm thinking of this live. Craig sees as the thoughts are starting to trickle into my head.
So you're rotating probably at least six linemen on a game day. Is there someone that can crack that rotation? Look, again, it depends on how the board falls. I'd put defensive line as a medium need, especially when you compare it to cornerback, edge, wide receiver. The other positions of need are a little bit higher, but I would think defensive line, because it always comes back to what I believe Monty really focuses on, and that's the line of scrimmage, whether you're talking about the offensive line or defensive
line. So with it being the focal point of Monty Austinfort's vision being the trenches, at defensive tackle or defensive line, are any of the players that we just listed off, the six that we just listed off, are any of them consistent starters, or is it going to remain on that rotating basis? Because if you bring a player like a Byron Murphy, like a Jerzon Newton, those are players that potentially, just based off of skill and what we saw from college and how you believe it could translate to the NFL, that could slide into what, maybe number two on that list?
Jones plays a lot, or has played a lot of snaps. Nichols has played a lot of snaps, talking about on a particular Sunday. Is that what this coaching staff wants, though? Do they like the rotation and that's just what they believe in? So you're not going to be up to that 65% snap average for the season, or dare I even say on a game, though, based on what you paid Jones and Nichols, you would think that they'd be out there a little bit more than maybe even Aralas wants to, or no one hit 50% of the defensive snaps a year ago from that room. Now, Jones was a lot higher than 50% last season. Nichols was above 50% last season. Do those numbers come down based off the defense? Do those numbers come down because Cardinals aren't asking Jones to do as much as he was asked to do previously?
And
I have no idea.
We're all speculating here. And I'm also thinking of it is, as much as we saw the defensive line and the rotation structure that we believe Nick Rallis wants to lean towards, the Cardinals also got hit really hard in that on the injury side of things. So you had to rotate. Because a guy like Roy Lopez, as he said earlier on in this episode, he wasn't even on the roster week one. He came in middle of the season. So So I probably am going to list it as a medium need, is the way I'm thinking of it.
Glad we could talk it through.
Yes, we're talking this through here on Cardinals Cover 2. Probably going to list it as a medium need with the idea that if you do draft a defensive tackle or defensive line as a whole, it's not the end of the world. While we would mostly prioritize an edge or a cornerback over that position, you're still reinforcing what Monty Austinfort truly believes in, and that is the defensive line. Primer complete.
Very good. Now, what you got to go back
is write it out.
When this gets posted, you go through it, and what you just said, transcribe it, and then post it on azcardinals.com.
I'm just going to put the link.
There you go. Even better.
Cross promotion.
There you go. azcardinals.com for the entire draft primer. Again, this week is defense. Last week was offense, and of course, Zach, well, he's been real busy, Bird Gang, because in addition to the draft primers, he's been following the mock draft and mock draft tracker 4.0 to be posted on Thursday of this week. I haven't seen as many mock drafts. I think everyone really piles on initially, and then some of the bigger names will do like a 2.0, 3.0, 4.0, but there's not a lot of guys out there that will do five different mock drafts, but it's very interesting to see now what people are mocking, and it's more trades. Early in this process, January, February, March, it was more no trades. Either this is how I see the board falling based off player availability, team need. Now it's based off of, there's always trades in the first round. Where's the first one going to come? Is it going to come at number three with the Patriots? Is it going to come with the Cardinals at number four? Do they drop down to six with the Giants? Or is it 11, 12, or 13 with the Vikings, Broncos, and or Raiders? That's what I'm seeing more so than anything.
Every team obviously has their eye on this draft, but really about four teams, and the Cardinals are one of the four teams right now, that, you know, the draft is, they're the center of the conversation right now. You already know what 1, 2, and 3 is potentially going to look like. It's all going to be quarterbacks. The saying that the draft starts when the Cardinals pick at number four, it's within good reason, because this is where things really start to change. And I was reading the Athletic article that Darren Urban alluded to on Cardinals Underground about the right way, quote-unquote right way, that GMs are supposed to draft. And it's through the trade-down process. And only about three of them, you know, only about three picks are right on these mock drafts by experts. You kind of already have your top three because you already know what it's going to be. But now it's really when it starts to get exciting for Cardinals fans, for fans from other teams that are potentially looking to trade up and try to trade into that top five to draft their quarterback of the future. But I don't think that it's nearly as much in terms of excitement, because we're still waiting. Monty said that he has the open sign. It's right there, ready to go. Now all we could do is speculate, and I think we're all starting to reach that breaking point a little bit, because nothing new is going to truly, at least in my opinion, come out of this draft season.
If Drake May falls out of the top three, which is
possible,
a potential, certainly a possibility, but he and Caleb Williams were 1 and 2 at the start of the college football season. Those were the two main quarterbacks. And Pro Football Focus, I believe this was a week or two ago, was talking about buy-sell draft rumors. And they mentioned Drake May becoming this year's overthought quarterback prospect, i.e. C.J. Stroud.
Mm-hmm.
And the more time passes, the more we dissect these players and you find things or you look for things, and all of a sudden Drake May is no longer that number two. He's number three, number four, probably not any lower than that. Is someone going to be enticed to move up to number four if Drake May is available? Or are there teams that really like J.J. McCarthy, who came out of nowhere this season? He was not being discussed at the start of the college football season. Really didn't have a great individual statistic season at Michigan. Won games, though. And quarterbacks, their job is to win you ball games, no matter what it takes. Is there going to be a team, if McCarthy is available at number four, that entices, say, the Giants or the Vikings? Then what do you do if you're Monty Austin?
And you got a head coach in Jim Harbaugh that's, you know, is advocating for J.J. McCarthy to be the number one draft pick for the next 30 years of the NFL draft at this rate, because of obviously they have that Michigan connection over there. As these quarterbacks are beginning to slide, and I'm sure if, you know, when the initial topic was Caleb Williams at one, Drake May at number two, I'm sure a lot of teams would have been surprised to see, oh, Drake May might be available on number four. We never even thought we'd have a chance to possibly get him. The conversation has shifted a lot. Jaden Daniels has rose up in draft boards. J.J. McCarthy has rose up. Winning games should matter to coaches. Now, it's not to say Division I, AA programs, because they don't have the same resources, not to say that shouldn't be taken into account, but being a quarterback for a national championship winning team and it being at Michigan, knowing the pressure that Michigan has every single year, that is, you know, that is important, and you could translate that pressure towards playing in the NFL. Not saying that they're on the same level, but quarterbacks and coaches, I mean, think about the ties. The NFL, as big of a community as it is, it's very small. And you think about Drake May's connection to Josh McCown from the Minnesota Vikings. There's all these different ties that
you try to connect the dots.
Exactly. You try to connect the dots, and everyone knows everybody at this rate. So it's funny, while everyone knows everyone, nobody truly knows what anybody is doing right now when it comes to this draft season.
By the way, how did it feel to say national championship winning quarterback out of Michigan? I'm paraphrasing because I don't remember the exact wording, but national championship in Michigan was all uttered in the same sentence by you.
That did happen.
Yes, it did. How do you feel? Are you all right? Lightheaded or anything?
I need a water. No, look.
Need some water? need a break?
I saw Penn State beat Michigan twice, I believe, while I was in school. Should have been three times, but I saw them beat them twice. I was on the sidelines for that whiteout game. I was on Michigan's sideline for that whiteout game when Jim Harbaugh called the timeout before the first snap of the game, and everyone went nuts when Mo Bamba was playing. I always say, when I was speaking on college tours at Penn State, that's my favorite school memory, is seeing Jim Harbaugh freak out and right away spamming for a timeout before the first snap of the game. So I've had my fair share of seeing Michigan lose.
Okay.
You know, Paris Johnson Jr. and I, we have our own, you know, beef of Penn State and Ohio State. We have our own beef there. It's friendly beef, though. We haven't had a Michigan guy in the room. Whether that changes this year, who knows?
And if a Michigan guy goes a second year without getting drafted or added, and then a third, we might have to wonder about your influence within this front office.
Oh, my influence? Ohio State hasn't beat Michigan, and Ohio State guy's in the building. I know fans would hope that another Ohio State guy and Marvin Harrison Jr. Yep. is in the building. That's two Ohio State Buckeyes. Tyreek Smith, another Ohio State Buckeye. Craig, as much as it's a Penn State thing, it really ain't a Penn State thing.
That's true. That is very true. It's also a Philly thing in that locker room as well.
No comment.
So the mock draft tracker 4.0 posted on Thursday. Last before we exit here on Cardinals Cover 2 presented by Hyundai, proud partner of the Arizona Cardinals. And I think this is a very cool story and something that you're working on. You've already had a chance to speak with Trey McBride about it. You hope to speak with DJ Dallas about it as well. And that is the NFL USO Tour in Poland involving, at the time when they signed up, Trey McBride with the Cardinals, DJ Dallas with the Seahawks, but when the trip happened in early April, now all of a sudden you're talking about teammates. And I think that's real cool because not only did you get the experience of something that maybe you had never thought you'd ever get to experience as far as a USO tour is, but now you're bonding with someone who just became your teammate but never thought was going to be your teammate 4 or 5 months earlier when you said, yeah, I'd like to go on that trip.
When I spoke to Trey, he said, like, it was very cool, you know, being able to look back and be like, oh, wait, I am going with the teammate now. It's no longer just DJ Dallas, the running back from the Seattle Seahawks, an NFC West rival. Now it's going to be somebody I share a locker room with and I go through the dog days of the summer with. So I haven't spoken to DJ yet, as you mentioned. I'm excited to, because I think for him, he's coming into a situation where he doesn't know as many players on the roster. So he gets that first taste of it by going to a different country in Poland with Trey McBride. They did a lot of cool stuff out there, a lot of rewarding stuff. They were, you know, they brought a lot of smiles. They got tours around the Army bases. They were able to play Madden tournaments against some of the other some of the military members out there. For a guy like Trey McBride, who has familial ties to the military, his brother was in the Navy, I believe it was. I'm going to mention it in the article to confirm. This is just off the top of the head, but My cause, my cleats were military base. I see him all the time at community service events, just being out there. So it's being able to connect with your community in the Valley is one thing. Be able to go global, to go international and bring those smiles out there. Beautiful stuff from those two guys.
And I think you'll see a player like McBride as you get more comfortable in your surroundings. Maybe you feel like you've got your footing within the team, your spot on the team, to where you can branch out a little bit and really have an impact in the community and really have that name value on the field because of what you've done and mean something when you're talking with these groups, whether it's individuals, kids, adults, and that voice all of a sudden becomes a little bit more impactful because of how successful you are on the football field. And then if there's a connection or a background, your voice matters because you have people, and I'll put adults in this category as well, they look up to someone who is dealing with something or has similar backgrounds as, but then has overcome it or is dealing with it, and it's a support system, depending on what is the particular thing that they are trying to represent or make more aware of. So I applaud every single player that does these community programs or even goes worldwide with this. So I do think you'll see Trey McBride become like a Dennis Gardeck that, and I'm sure there's players out there that do it, but just don't want the publicity or don't publicize it themselves. But we know Gardeck is there almost every single week doing something. And I think there's going to be, you don't be surprised if you see Trey McBride and then maybe in a year or two, a Michael Wilson, those younger players that come into the league and then get familiar, like the city, like the surroundings they're in, like the state, and then say, yeah, I'd like to do more.
I think that a guy like Dennis Gardeck became a fan favorite because of what he was able to do on the field, but the fact that he was also, he talked a big game of being able to stay involved in the community and now acts on it too. a guy like Trey McBride was heavily involved in the community last year, the beginning half of the season. Maybe not as many players knew who Trey McBride was in terms of fans. Not as many fans knew who Trey McBride was on the football field. They might have just seen him in the community. Now seeing him emerge into a top tight end in the league, you could put him up for that argument, especially when you hope to see the step from year two to year three. That excitement level that he showed on Monday, translate that into action on the field, and you are going to see another star in the making in Trey McBride. You get to see him in the community, and it's to show that these are human beings too. They were raised with good values. These are guys that are football guys, but they're also good people. That's something that Monty and JG spoke heavily about when they first came into this regime, is they want good people in the facility. You could talk a big game, you could seem like a good guy, but when you actually go out into the community and beyond, it's impressive stuff from those two guys.
So that story upcoming on azcardinals.com. They were not teammates at the time when they signed up. They became teammates before the trip, and then all of a sudden spending time with our military members in Poland. So not only is it something together, but it's out of the country as well. So I think it's very cool. And again, story upcoming on azcardinals.com. We have kept Zach real busy over the last couple of weeks.
I'm excited for once the draft is over. It's no longer the talk about speculation. Let's get some football going. The guys in the facility, you could feel that buzz just in the air. We're not necessarily, we don't see what's going on, but you could feel it. And that's exciting stuff. And, you know, before we know it, draft's going to come around. The continuation of OTAs is going to come around. We're going to have a little break, and then it's right back to State Farm for training camp.
As of this recording, 8 days until the draft. 8 days. And I, for one, am in agreement with you. Can't wait for it to get here and have some new players to talk about and to leave that speculation in the rearview mirror.
But think about the hundreds of players we've thought about. Now we can actually talk about others. We've thought about, all these potential different options, especially if you do these mock drafts on your own time and you start to learn about the players, or you see on the ticker at NFL Network on the bottom all the different prospects at defensive tackle, defensive line, like I'm looking at right now, a Tavondre Sweat, a Darius Robinson. You get to have those players actually get assigned to a team, and let's talk some X's and O's after that.
A week from Thursday, the 2024 NFL Draft, and as we speak here on this Wednesday, Cardinals have 11 picks, 6 in the first, 92 in the first round. We'll see if that changes for GM Monty Austin Ford, depending on what he decides to do or doesn't decide to do when the Cardinals are on the clock. And on that note, speaking of clocks, we will put a lid on this edition of Cardinals Cover 2 presented by Hyundai, proud partner of the Arizona Cardinals. As always, special thanks to our executive producer, Jim Omohundro, our associate producer, Cody Fincher. For Zach Gershman, I'm Craig Riolu. We'll talk to you next time here on Cardinals Cover 2.